Sean Ohanian appearing for Plaintiff Gasparian.
Thank you.
This is a case that has multiple errors by the commissioner, and I'll begin with the longtime treating doctor, who's a general practitioner, Dr. Janoyan, who started treating Gasparian in July of 2001 and is still treating him today. Dr. Janoyan furnished over 100 pages of treatment records and about a 5-6 page report. And he found that the claimant suffered from severe depression. His opinion about the severe depression was substantiated and supported by Dr. Taubenfeld, a psychologist who treated claimant on several occasions. And then later on, when Dr. Levin of the Los Angeles Mental Health Clinic began treating claimant, she as well. All three treating doctors, the first doctor is a general practitioner, the second
Mr. Ohanian, may I interrupt you just a minute? I'm not clear. It's my understanding that the ALJ focused on a lack of records provided to support the medical analysis and conclusions of your treating physicians, yet no additional records were provided thereafter to the Appeals Council. Is that correct?
You're talking about Dr. Levin from the mental health clinic?
Well, I'm talking about the lack of records to support the...
Well, the mental health clinic began treating the patient in early, 2006, I believe it was. And he was seen there on about 4 or 5 times, and reports were provided from the clinic by Dr. Levin and other people who worked on her staff.
Well, what about Dr. Joanian and Taubenfeld?
I'm sorry?
Doctors Joanian, I believe it's pronounced, and Taubenfeld, or Taubenfeld?
Oh, Taubenfeld treated the claimant on several occasions earlier, and he did psychological testing and gave the results of his psychological testing, which you can compare with the one-time report by the state agency doctor, Dr. Colonna. The fact is that there was Dr. Genoa, a general practitioner, treated this man 5 or 6 years when he appeared for his hearing. Dr. Taubenfeld had tested claimant several times and written a typed report, and then he moved out of the area. The third doctor, Dr. Levin, is a psychiatrist in a mental health clinic in Hollywood, and she treated him at least 4 or 5 occasions prior to the time that the judge issued his decision. Now, where the judge made a mistake was he relied on the one-time consultative report by Dr. Colonna, and he never pointed out any independent clinical findings in Dr. Colonna's report that overcame the findings of the three long-time treating doctors. The rule that applies there is Orn versus Astru, which says that if the ALJ wants to reject treating doctor's findings in this kind of a situation, he has to compare the report of the one-time examiner with the reports of the treating doctors and show where there's independent clinical findings that, would prove his point of mild. The judge found mild dysthymia. That's the diagnosis made by Dr. Colonna. And the other diagnoses made by the treating doctors were major depression, low mental intellectual functioning, and so on. But
if I understand correctly, part of what concerned the either the ALJ or the Appeals Council was that the treating physician's conclusions weren't supported by the underlying tests, or the underlying tests and records like that were missing. And my question is, and I know you think maybe correctly so, that they had a duty to try to develop the record and get those records. My question to you is, are those records in fact available? Do you know?
Which doctor is it?
Chobenfield and Genoa.
Chobenfield, no. His records, I tried to find him, couldn't locate him.
And what about Dr. Genoian's?
Genoian provided over 100 pages of records, both monthly or whatever, treating records, handwritten. Some were typed up. He did provide a 5 or 6 page typed up report, which summarizes his treatment over the years.
Does everything that he's relied on, all the tests that he based his opinion on, has that already been furnished? Is there anything that we would remand it for to go get some more records, or is that all? Is it the whole package?
With respect to Dr. Genoian, I think the records he provided more than ample and complete in every
respect.
Nothing
else that the ALJ would need?
Well, the judge was critical of the records, not of every treating doctor that furnished records, but he never made any effort to say, I want to recontact these doctors and get more.
Counsel, I think the question is, if the doctors were recontacted,
yes,
are there more tests or records that exist that
no.
they could provide? That even though you think there's enough now, is there more out there that theoretically could come in if they were recontacted?
All right. Let me respond this way. Dr. Genoian could have provided anything that the ALJ wanted. He's always been available. He's employed by the county. He does this regularly. And he's the doctor that to this day, he's treated this patient about 9 years. Now, Dr. Taubenfeld could not be located, so he could not provide anything. However, if he wanted to contact the Hollywood Mental Health Clinic, Dr. Levin, she would have provided whatever information the judge wanted. Again, these are county
doctors. You don't know whether or not there are additional records to be obtained, is that correct?
I'm sorry?
You do not know whether or not there are additional records to be obtained that would support your client's case?
Additional records can be obtained from Hollywood Mental Health, that's Dr. Levin and Dr. Genoian. I say Dr. Taubenfeld, we don't know his whereabouts.
So two out of three of those physicians, there is more evidence out there. One of them there isn't, unless you now locate the doctor. Is that a fair summary?
If you're talking about the present time. When
right.
the judge issued his decision, some years back, he alleged vagueness, incompleteness. He couldn't understand anything, so he should have followed up and at that time secured records. Subsequently, the claimant had filed for a second application of disability, and he was found disabled. But the judge should have timely followed up and in alleging vagueness, incompleteness, his inability to understand the doctor's records.
My question, well, what I'm trying to get at is, suppose we remand the case to the ALJ with directions to get the records. Is this a futile thing because he's already gotten the records? Is it a futile thing because the records no longer exist?
The records, as they became available, I furnished them, including some that were sent to the Appeals Council in Falls Church, Virginia, periodically. And that was, brought up to date based on keeping the record complete. I did that. The judge did nothing.
Oh, I take it there's no point in remanding it for him to get more records because you've already given him all the records. Is that what you're saying?
I think the record is complete.
Okay. Fair enough. Did you want to reserve your...
Yes, I'll reserve my time. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Geraldine Gulseth, appearing for the Commissioner of Social Security. I just wanted to make a couple of points. The claimant persists in arguing that Dr. Colonna's report did not constitute substantial evidence, but it was based on independent clinical findings that differed from Dr. Taubenfeld's, which the district court also discussed. And in terms of the record, with respect to Dr. Janowian, we agree that there were a lot of progress notes that were provided. But the progress notes and the picture that Dr. Janowian sort of painted of the claimant in his June 2005 letter don't match.
I'm still a little confused about the state of the record. One of the things, for example, that the ALJ found was missing was a CT scan that Dr. Janowian referred to, but that wasn't in the material that was provided at the time. Does it exist? In other words, I guess I'm asking the same question that we were asking opposing counsel. If the ALJ was faced with a situation in which the physician said, I'm basing my opinion on a number of tests, including A, B, and C, and number C is not in the record, shouldn't the ALJ have asked for it, and does it exist? Can it be obtained?
Well, of course, I have a number of responses to your question. First of all, claimant who was represented by counsel had the burden to furnish that evidence. In addition, I think the
ALJ,
when the
ALJ knows that there's an ambiguity and that there's something out there, there is an obligation to pursue it, isn't there?
There is certainly the ALJ shares a burden in developing the record, but I don't believe, although claimant pointed out in his reply brief to this court that he raised the issue at the administrative level, I don't believe he raised the duty to develop issue to the district court, and he has yet to point out where he raised the issue. So it's the commissioner's position that issue is waived. But with respect to that particular CT scan that was referred to in Dr. Janowian's letter, I would point out that the time period that is at issue here is from July 2005, when the claimant applied for SSI benefits, to the November 2006 ALJ decision. So the most probative relevant evidence obviously is going to be contemporaneous evidence during that time period. The CT scan that he cites, I believe, was in February of 2002 and revealed mild atrophy. So if the claimant thought that a CT scan findings from over 3 years before the SSI filing date was, relevant to the period at issue, it would have behooved him to submit it.
Well, that kind of begs the question. My question was whether it exists, and apparently you're saying, sure, it exists. It's just this period of time.
I don't know that, Your Honor. I don't know if it exists. It's referred to in...
Why wouldn't a brain scan that predated the period at issue be relevant? Do brains grow back the way, if there's brain atrophy, does it grow back the way a bone heals or something? I mean, I could understand it if it was the flip side. We were only dealing up to 2007, and this was much later, so it doesn't pertain. But I don't really understand the counterargument.
Well, you're asking me why it would not be relevant?
Right. You seem to say it's not relevant because it was before the period at issue.
Well, first of all, we don't know whether it exists. But even if it does, and we accept that there were mild findings of atrophy, the ALJ had all this other contemporaneous evidence available to him about the claimant's functioning. Dr. Janowian's treatment notes, which were, showed that he was healthy, basically. I mean, most of the findings were normal. He was just on a routine of medications. We have Dr. Colonna's November 2005 testing, which is right smack in the middle of the period at issue. Certainly diagnostic test findings are relevant, but the ALJ and the commissioner in deciding disability look at the clinical manifestations, that is, you know, how the person actually attests during the, you know, doctor's visit.
It struck me in looking at this that the ALJ, at least in some respects, made factual errors that seem very apparent. For example, saying there was only one back x-ray when there were two back x-rays, relying on the idea that there had been no mental health treatment sought after June of 2006 when the record is clear that there was. There are just a whole series of factual errors that are unassailable in my view. So what should we do about that?
First, naturally, I disagree that there are errors that are harmful errors. I think the Appeals Council adequately addressed those additional mental health treatment notes from Dr. Levin. The issue here is whether these treating source opinions were supported by the evidence of record. And when you compare Dr. Janowian's, you know, dire picture of the claimant in his June 2005 letter, it simply doesn't match the progress notes, nor does Dr. Levin's January 2007 opinion match her progress notes, which, again, are fairly cursory and showing that the mental status findings were fairly intact. As for Dr. Taubenfeld, the claimant testified that he hadn't seen him for a couple of years at the time of the hearing in November 2006. And what we do have is Dr. Colonna's findings and Dr. Enriquez's findings from November 2005, which directly conflict with the treating source findings.
Let me ask you, the Appeals Council dealt with this in 2007, if I'm remembering correctly. Does that sound right?
Let me check, Your Honor.
April
2007.
April 27th, 2007 was there.
Yes, correct.
Now, he subsequently filed a disability claim. Is that correct? That was subsequently approved?
I believe so, yes. Claimant represented that, yes.
You don't know whether it's true or not?
I do not know whether that's true. But I believe that the period that he... excuse me for a moment. I think the period that he... said he was found disabled was January 2009, which was more than, 2 years after the ALJ decision here. And certainly we don't, you know what that finding was based on.
I just want to make sure I have a handle on what we're talking about, at best back benefits for a certain period of time, because now taking counsel's representation is true. He's already drawing disability from 2007 forward?
It would be 2009
forward.
So we're talking about a July 2005 SSI application. There are no retroactive benefits on an SSI application, so any benefits would begin July 2005, assuming all the other eligibility factors were met. But in terms of... with respect to Judge Graber's noting errors that the claimant or that the ALJ purportedly made, I would say that he may have misstated in terms of Dr. Levin's treatment, but again, the Appeals Council evaluated those treatment notes and found that her opinion was unsupported. There's no dispute here that Dr. Levin and Dr. Janowian treated the claimant. They were treating physicians, but that doesn't end the issue, doesn't end the inquiry. The next issue is whether their opinions are supported by contemporaneous progress notes, findings, and what we have here simply doesn't satisfy that question. Dr. Colonna's, as the district court recognized, Dr. Colonna's findings were directly conflicting with Dr. Taubenfeld. Dr. Taubenfeld believed that the claimant suffered from a memory impairment. Dr. Colonna found that his memory was intact and slightly impaired.
I see
she felt
this. So finish your sentence, if you will.
Oh, she felt that the claimant wasn't putting forth a full effort on his exam. Just to sum up, Your Honors, the claimant may disagree with what the ALJ found, but the ALJ's findings simply need be supported by substantial evidence, and he did rationally interpret the evidence in this case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Honey, you've got about a minute left.
The ALJ misunderstood the meaning of giddiness. He gave the definition that is commonly used in conversation and understanding, but giddiness has a specific meaning in the medical dictionary. It means one thing, dizziness. When the hearing was going on, the judge questioned the claimant, telling him that giddiness meant being euphoric, generally upbeat, and happy on occasion. And he had this in his mind that the treating doctor, Dr. Genoian, had reported this over a period of years, and so this made the judge think, well, this man can't be very depressed if his treating doctor over a period of years says he has giddiness. Unfortunately, from that discussion, the judge then went to asking the claimant about his pain. And the claimant, using an interpreter, I don't know if the translation came through very clearly, but he talked about on two or three occasions a month that he has these feelings where he's afraid of falling, so he lies down to rest, and that's when he called it the worst pain. And then another instance was called severe pain. This judge did not find that the claimant had any pain. In his findings of fact, he omits any finding regarding pain or the dizziness. So he completely misunderstood, and not only misunderstood, he twisted what the claimant was trying to tell him into saying that, well, he just doesn't feel so good on those two or three occasions a month, and he dismissed the whole thing, completely misunderstanding the severe dizziness, etc.
Thank you, Mr. Hanley.
Thank you.
Also, thank you to the case just argued is submitted. 09.